You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. Preliminary unofficial results are in for Oregon's primary election. In contested races for seats on the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners, the candidates endorsed by incumbents are in the lead. Mike Brocious, a retired Costco executive, held 64% of the vote as of Wednesday morning for the District 3 seat representing the Astoria area. His opponent, Mitra Vazin, trailed with 35% of the vote. Brocious thanked the people who helped with his campaign for the District 3 seat. Brocious had the endorsement of several local officials, including the incumbent, Pamela Webb. Brocious focused his campaign on the need to develop living wage jobs in the county. He said he isn't waiting until his swearing in January to begin that work.
You know, we're continuing to work on bringing living wage careers to the county, and I'm going to continue to do that. As a matter of fact, I'm here tonight with a group from WCT and some other organizations talking about how do we continue to drive what we've been working on for the last 6 months to a year on the welding programs and the hospital relationships. And we also are here with some people talking about how do we drive affordable housing and mass production of housing here in our community, which obviously provides jobs, but it also hopefully provides some lower cost housing in some of the areas in our counties.
Vazin, who also serves on the Clatsop Community College Board, declined to comment on the election results. On Tuesday night, she accused KMUN of not being objective in its reporting of her candidacy. KMUN interviewed Vazin in February after she filed to run for the District 3 seat. The station did not receive any complaints or requests for corrections from Vazin about that story when a radio version aired soon afterwards, or when it was published online at KMUN.org, or later when it was published by our news partner, The Astorian. KMUN also put out a podcast and video of a candidates' forum that included both Vazin and Brocious. The candidates' responses to all questions asked of them at that forum were published in full. In the race for the District 5 Clatsop County Commissioner seat, Rand Dufka, an Arch Cape contractor, led with 56% of the vote. Glenn Gaither, a retired corrections officer, trailed with 42%. Dufka had been encouraged to run by incumbent Leanne Thompson. Both Dufka and Gaither voiced concerns about bringing better-paying jobs to the county. But Dufka said his main priority was to ensure representation of South County issues. He said he largely agreed with and supported the efforts of current Commissioner Thompson. He could not be reached for comment on election night. KMUN did reach Gaither, who said he was not ready to call the race on Tuesday.
I just got to wait for the numbers to come in and then see what they are in the morning, and whoever has the most votes wins. So, pretty straightforward. It's going to be simple.
For the District 16 State Senate seat, Democrat Rachel Armitage appears likely to face Republican Courtney Bangs in November's general election. Bangs currently serves on the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners. Her seat will become vacant if she triumphs over Armitage in November. Bangs has been endorsed by incumbent state senator Suzanne Weber. Weber is barred from running for re-election. Newly minted Democrat Cyrus Javity was unopposed in his bid to be the party's candidate for the District 32 state representative seat. He appears on course to face Tillamook Republican Max Sherman in November. Sherman took the lead over Republican opponents Christian Honnell and Adam Dean. In Clatsop and Columbia counties, Honnell and Adam were neck and neck for ballots cast. But Sherman took a decisive lead among Republican voters in Tillamook, landing more than 58% of the vote there. Ballot measures in Clatsop County saw mixed success Tuesday night. A general obligation bond to improve city facilities in Gearhart was failing, with 61% of the vote opposed, according to preliminary results. Voters also appeared on track to reject a 5-year local option tax for operations at the Seaside School District. But ballot returns remain close. The Warrenton Rural Fire Protection District landed a 5-year local tax for general operations. Meanwhile, a measure to drop fluoride from the drinking water supply in Warrenton failed, with a majority of voters opting to keep fluoride in the water. In Tillamook County, incumbent County Commissioner Mary Faith Bell held the lead over challenger Jeff Spink with 55% of the vote. A series of measures to dissolve the Tillamook Rural Fire Protection District and form a new fire department were advancing with more than 50% of the vote. If the results hold, the Tillamook Rural Fire Protection District will merge with the Bay City Fire Department to form the Tillamook Bay Fire and Rescue Rural Fire Protection District. In Columbia County, preliminary results show Rainier Mayor Jerry Cole leading in a bid for the position 2-seat on the Columbia County Board of Commissioners. Cole has just over 52% of the vote, ahead of incumbent Kelly Jo Smith, who is at 34% as of this morning. Jonathan Barclay, who serves on the County Planning Commission, trailed with 12%. Oregon State Senator Christine Drazen is headed for a rematch against Governor Tina Kotek. The Associated Press called the race Tuesday based on partial returns. The two political rivals faced off for governor in 2022. The GOP primary was one of the more competitive ones in recent history. Both Drazen and former Portland Trailblazer Chris Dudley had experience running for the state's top job. Drazen was the Republican nominee in 2022. Dudley lost a tight race in 2010. The other two top contenders included State Representative Ed Deal of Scio and Marion County Commissioner Danielle Bethel. All of these results and more for races across the state are available online at results.oregonvotes.gov. You're listening to KMUN.
A proposal to raise Oregon's gas tax to pay for bridge and road maintenance has failed. More than 83% of voters rejected Measure 120. The Associated Press called the race minutes after early returns were published Tuesday evening. The measure faced tall odds. Many voters have been frustrated by the high cost of living, especially gas at the pump. Measure 120 was so widely expected to fail that no state leaders campaigned in support of it. This is the latest development in lawmakers' quest to resolve funding deficits facing state and local transportation agencies. Its failure sends lawmakers back to the drawing board. After numerous long and sometimes contentious public meetings and discussions about how to address Astoria's most visible homeless population, city leaders are considering a new shelter-first policy. KMUN's Katie Frankowitz listened in on a meeting this week where the components of the new initiative were discussed and has this report.
The initiative is meant to increase the ways people can move towards becoming sheltered and also support them in that effort, while refining rules around public camping to address ongoing issues. The Shelter First initiative was developed by City Councilors Andrea Mazzarella and Elizabeth Adams. It comes as previous efforts, including attempts to create enhanced enforcement downtown and establish a designated campsite, failed or stalled. Mazzarella said the initiative is an attempt at a compromise.
We need to consider not just all of the input that we're hearing from our constituents. We also need to consider the state, federal, and county regulations that we have to comply with. We need to look at our city budget and what's financially feasible. We need to look at our staff capacity and what's reasonable to consider in those situations, as well as listening to the demographic that this affects the most and the providers that specialize in helping them. And then try to take all of that information and filter it into something that might get a majority of support on a council that historically kind of doesn't see things the same way or eye to eye either. So this is an incredibly challenging thing. I know some people feel like we talk about it too much and some people feel like we don't talk about it enough. We're talking about it tonight.
The initiative would involve the hiring of a homeless liaison to work directly with Astoria's unhoused campers. The installment of dry storage facilities so unhoused people have somewhere to store belongings, closer coordination with the county and organizations that provide different types of shelter in Astoria, creation of a community-based shelter program, and review and amendments to Astoria's current camping code. City staff say most of this could be in place or moving forward by this summer. Proposed amendments to the camping code and a review of a liaison position are expected to be on the City Council's agenda in June. I'm Katie Frankowitz reporting.
A pride proclamation in Seaside drew some heat at a recent meeting. Seaside Mayor Stephen Wright deemed June 2026 as Pride Month in Seaside at a recent City Council meeting. Many residents praised the message, its stated purpose of supporting the right of every citizen to experience equality and freedom from discrimination. But in a back and forth, some residents felt it uplifted one group over another and conflicted with their religious beliefs. One Gearhar resident said she and her husband previously contacted Wright to request the city instead recognize a week dedicated to bringing God back to America. She said she received no response from the mayor. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. Tillamook County District Attorney Aubrey Olson is pushing back after an investigation into her office identified a number of issues. Olson has filed numerous subpoenas attempting to access documents related to the investigation, as well as the whistleblower who initiated it, and Tillamook County Sheriff Josh Brown. In a tort claim notice filed in February, Olson alleged that county commissioners and the county's chief administrative officer had damaged her reputation by announcing the investigation publicly. The county vigorously contests the subpoenas. The county's lawyer has argued the subpoenas are an attempt to retaliate against people who participated in the investigation into the district attorney's office. She says Olson is using grand jury investigations improperly and seeking the subpoenas for personal benefit. A hearing date has yet to be announced. Olson declined to comment. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. Former Ilwaco Fire Chief Jeremy S. Archer's trial is being pushed back yet again. Archer faces 51 felony counts, including 21 counts of first-degree child molestation, 10 counts of first-degree rape of a child, and 7 counts of commercial sexual abuse of a child. Archer's trial was initially set for May 9th, but the date was struck when he waived his right to a speedy trial. He has since waived his right 2 more times, most recently on May 8th. Pacific County Superior Court Judge Donald J. Richter set Archer's new trial dates for August 10th to August 14th. If convicted, Archer faces up to life in prison with possibility of parole. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. The Oregon Department of Forestry is gearing up for another expensive wildfire season. Historic low snowpack, widespread drought, and one of the warmest winters on record could all contribute to more destructive fires. Kyle Williams is the Deputy Director of Fire Operations at ODF. He says bigger blazes have dramatically increased the costs over the last decade.
More demand, more training, having to pay folks in order to go do really hard work. And in addition, fires that continue to get bigger, longer duration, and in more complicated places. You've got kind of a perfect storm.
Williams says investing in fire prevention and community preparedness will be key to reducing costs in the coming decades. Oregon lawmakers created a new tax last year on nicotine patches to fund these efforts. The Army Corps of Engineers manages 2 major reservoirs in the Rogue Basin. Experts are hoping to avoid major fish die-offs and other challenges. Jefferson Public Radio's Roman Battaglia reports.
Water levels in Lost Creek and Applegate Lakes are already far below their average. That's a similar issue across Oregon, which is heading into what could be a very dry summer. Army Corps Civil Engineer Kevin McAllister says they're preparing for the worst.
The last poor water year that we had was in 2021, and we are already below where we were at that year.
The Army Corps' main goal is to help fish populations, which requires a careful balance of water releases from reservoirs. They're aiming to avoid major die-offs of salmon, specifically Chinook, which they say are more sensitive to dam operations. Corps staff are also trying to reach out to businesses operating downstream on the Rogue River, like jet boat tour companies, to better engage with them on possible impacts. I'm Roman Battaglia, reporting.
For decades, the Yakima Nation gatherers say it's been really hard to find huckleberries in a southwest Washington national forest. But tribal gatherers say things are changing. NWPB's Courtney Flatt has more.
Huckleberries are a culturally important food for many Northwest tribes. But for the last few decades, gatherers with the Yakima Nation say commercial harvesters damaged plants and took too many berries. And sometimes tribal members say they felt unsafe picking. So the U.S. Forest Service agreed to temporarily stop commercial harvests in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. Elaine Harvey is a gatherer and member of the Rock Creek Band of the Yakima Nation.
All these years, there wasn't berries, but there'd just be some here and there, you know, and it's like, oh, maybe we'll get half a gallon today. And last year, the bushes were just loaded.
Other area tribes were part of the push to stop commercial harvests. And now, for the second year in a row, Harvey says it's been easier to gather. I'm Courtney Flatt.
Hundreds of thousands of visitors from around the world are expected to flock to Seattle and surrounding communities this summer for six FIFA World Cup soccer matches. Ahead of these events, the city of SeaTac is making sure local hotels are prepared to respond to opioid overdoses. KNKX reporter Mitch Borden has the story.
The city of SeaTac expects that its approximately 30 hotels will be filled with international visitors this summer who are here for the World Cup. But that could mean hospitality workers may encounter foreign guests who have overdosed on opioids. That's why the city is distributing the opioid reversal medication, naloxone, to local hotels, along with instructions on how to use it. Will Lugo is the city's emergency management administrator.
They could stumble in across somebody that's overdosed and not know what to do. So I think educating and training the frontline workers is valuable to save lives.
Along with naloxone kits, SeaTac hotels will have resources for foreign guests, such as how to call 911. I'm Mitch Borden, reporting.
Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. American Democracy Minute is up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. May 18th, the U.S. Supreme Court returned two cases to lower courts which challenge Voting Rights Act provisions allowing an individual to sue for violations, called a private right of action. But the cases may return. An Eighth Circuit appeals panel dismissed a 2023 Arkansas redistricting case because it said VRA Section 2 did not give individuals or pro-voter groups a right to challenge racial gerrymandering, only the U.S. Justice Department. At the time, in the previous 40 years, there had been 182 successful VRA Section 2 cases. Of those cases, only 15 were brought solely by the Justice Department. The Eighth Circuit's decision had been considered fringe since it ignored U.S. Supreme Court precedent upholding the private right of action. The High Court could have overturned the ruling May 18th, but instead ruled 8-1 to return the cases to the lower courts for further consideration. The two cases, a Fifth Circuit challenge by African American voters in Mississippi and another from the Eighth Circuit by Native American voters in North Dakota, will be reviewed in light of April's Calais case, striking down use of race in redistricting and making it harder to challenge racial discrimination. We'll be following this case closely. We have our past reports and more on the private right of action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
This is KMUN.